the chain that helps you up doesn't start until a good 50 to 100 metres up the rock. And these kids are about 10 metres away. They're on their hands and knees crawling up. The parents, you can hear them encouraging them up to the... G'day. Up to the chain, because you know, if you make it to the...
Is it open?
Yeah, no, I think it's open now. Okay. Yeah, it's kicked off, yep.
So where do you start? Anywhere?
Up to you.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Can I ask you a couple of questions? I'm from ABC Radio. In terms of climbing it, you're okay with it?
No, I'm petrified. Absolutely petrified. But
in terms of the respect stuff?
Yeah, I know. I don't want to be disrespectful at all, but it is there and they have made it a facility to climb, and therefore hopefully they will get a bit of money for their own culture moving forward. So I'll be honest, mixed views, but it's there.
But right now we're two steps away from
it. And I will be climbing it once, yeah.
And you're going to do it.
Yeah.
This is it. You're two steps away from the rock. You've made it all the way here.
I know.
Is anything going to stop you from taking those two steps onto that rock right now? Anything I could say that could stop you?
No, I don't think so.
Nothing's going to stop you?
No. Not on that route, no.
Okay.
No.
Well, good luck with it. Good luck with it, okay?
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Mike Williams, and this is Off Track on RN, and our final instalment of Inland Island Stories from Central Australia. Today we're heading to Uluru, and I'm asking the question, to climb or not to climb?
I'm by the side of the road, somewhere between Alice Springs and Uluru.
You should know that Uluru is not in Alice Springs. It's actually about a five-hour drive southwest. I left Alice one afternoon and slept overnight in my car.
And the thing that I notice is the stars.
The next morning wasn't so romantic.
I'm cold. Okay. It's 6:30 in the morning and I've just woken up. And I've woken up because it's freezing. Oh, it's so cold in this car. Everything's like got icicles on it. Okay, I'm gonna put the air conditioning on. Then I'm gonna hit the road. Like you, Uluru.
Uluru. About an hour later, the sun's up and I'm sweating in shorts and a t-shirt. And I finally see the rock, it rises up out of the ground like it wants to meet me. It's just like the pictures. It's awesome.
My name's Tim Rogers, and I'm a visitor services officer at Uluru Cutajuta National Park.
You're not the lead singer of UMI, are you?
No, I'm not, unfortunately.
Alrighty, anyone wanting to do the Mala walk? Over this way, please. Okay, now as we go along this morning, there is areas along this part of the walk where I will ask you please refrain from photography.
But Tim's leading a really, really fascinating tour around part of the base of the rock. He explains how the rock was a transient point for different Aboriginal mobs.
So people would come to this area here as they were moving through. No one lived around the base of Uluru on a permanent basis. This place was way too important to have activity here every day of the week. Because this environment's so harsh, you've got an evaporation rate that's 7 times greater than any other part of Australia, and food on a day-to-day basis is very sporadic. You want to leave an area like this as a conservation area. So in turn, by not living here, not disturbing it, the animals in turn come in continually, they feel safe and happy, they breed, then in turn supports people that came through this area as well. So we'll head up to this first little cave around the corner here.
Oh, this is the book of Australia, and there's a...
You edited this?
Yeah. Richard White, Associate Professor of History at Sydney University, and one of my specialities is the history of tourism, and that's a bus in Oxford, actually.
Oh, right.
it shows, you know, what an international symbol, how recognisable it is, and that's really happened only in the last 20 years internationally.
Hey, guys.
Yeah. You guys just climbed the rock, have you?
Oh, yeah. It was hard. Very hard, but so beautiful at the end. It was it.
Why did you want to come to this part of Australia?
Because it's like the most important thing you have to see in Australia when you come here.
Everybody knows that. And if you go in Australia, yeah. you When and you think very... about Australia, it's Uluru.
People in France, when they think of Australia, they think of this rock.
A lot of international people.
It's like people from France think about Paris, and we think about Uluru.
By the middle of the 20th century, it was becoming known for the colours, and, you know, people were talking about the Red Centre. It really only takes off as a tourist destination in the 1970s. And I think the interesting thing is, you know, then it's seen as the centre of Australia, you know, and it becomes symbolic, sort of heart of Australia. But then I think, you know, what's been interesting in the last 20 years, I mean, since it was handed back, it's become seen as a sort of sign of reconciliation. Aboriginal ownership has become part of the tourist experience. I think that's sort of actually worked quite successfully to change the nature of the symbol.
And now, today, the Uluru Catatuta Aboriginal Land Trust becomes the custodian of this heartland of Australia.
Last time, I understand, by tomorrow, the rock will be missing. The Aboriginal people are going to take it away.
Our symbolism of the rock has changed dramatically over the years. In 1985, it was handed back to the traditional custodians. They then leased it to the government for 99 years.
Especially a symbol that stands for the nation, then you're always going to get different groups trying to say, well, that stands for all these values that I adhere to. Symbols are always going to be contested.
Today, the local Indigenous people now have a say in how it's run.
It's a committee of 12 members, four of the Western philosophy of how to look after it, to park, manage it, tourism side of things. Four Ananal senior women and four of those senior men, which are also elected by the community. That way it gives Ananal the capability of expressing their concerns. Nothing in this park is done without their consent or prior knowledge, and it's discussed openly.
Tuxworth continues to maintain that the traditional owners are going to change the park in ways such as removing the chain for tourists. What's your position on that? Can you try and allay that concern once and for all?
Been sacred place for the Aboriginal people, but the Europeans have already started climbing and it's upset us and spoiled our feelings. Now it's already done that, so we allow that now, but very, very, you know, we're not really that happy about it, but it's well known for visitors to climb now, and then we're accepting that part now.
Audio from the press conference at the handover in 1985. When I told people I was going to Uluru and I was thinking about climbing it, most people I told were actually surprised that you still were allowed to climb it. They'd all thought that it had been shut down already.
My understanding is that the parks are working towards eventually nobody climbing the rock. Is that right?
At the moment, there's been no decision made, okay? In joint management, part of that lease agreement was on an emphasis of educating with the end result of the climb potentially being closed. But at this very moment in time, there has been no decision on it being closed or left open. So it's still the same as it was when the park was given that lease back in 85.
We hope that just climb this is not unrespectful, because we don't want to be unrespectful.
But the sign says, asks you not. So I think by climbing it, you are being a little... Well, you are being disrespectful.
Yeah, a little bit. Maybe. But in our mind...
In your minds,
we
yeah.
wish that we are not unrespectful, you know.
So
because we don't want that. We just want to walk on it. No rubbish, nothing. Just walk on it.
But just the act of walking on it...
Yeah, maybe. I'm sorry for that.
I don't think you're sorry.
I'm sorry, but by then it's very good. So it's difficult to be very, very, very sorry. But we know that it's not...
Because you knew beforehand, so it's hard to be sorry
because
you knew.
Yeah.
When you hear the Ananal say here that I belong to this country, they're not talking about the whole of Australia. They're talking about the environment they were born in, what they're responsible for, and what they maintain and pass on to the next generation. So when you hear Ananal in this area say, this is my country, this is the area they're talking about, and they are responsible for looking after it. You probably noticed a lot of...
Oh, I can't watch this. Watching if you saw someone fall, it'd just be horrific. It would really be horrific if somebody lost their footing and slipped and rolled down the rock. I can't tell you how disturbed you would be for the rest of your life to witness something like that. I'm nervous watching.
The fact that people die on something that they are responsible for, in a sense, you know, is very, very disturbing and worrying for them. Naturally, they would advise people not to climb it. I mean, you know, if even one person died climbing the Sydney Harbour Bridge, it would probably be closed down as a tourist attraction. Certainly if 30 people had died...
We wouldn't be climbing it, no.
No one would be climbing it. It would be, you know, there would be a ban put on it.
How has it gotten this far that you still can, just on a legal, level?
Well, I think that probably goes back to the point about it being an outdoor experience, you know, being an adventure.
Oh, because it's a natural environment, right?
That's right, exactly.
Stories coming out today, climbing the rock does have its dangers too, not so much from falling off, but from the heart attacks induced by the exertion. 15 people have died this year after climbing the rock. Seems to exert a fascination.
Thank you! Looking at the climb, it looks pretty intimidating. It looks pretty dangerous, actually.
It is when this wind picks up. It's a 73-degree angle. The whole surface of Uluru is like shingle on a roof as such, so it's not a smooth surface as such. I think last count was over 30 people. That was on the rock. That's not people that have gone home later and had a heart attack from physical exertion that they weren't used to as such. So,
right. You know.
Three main reasons that we will close the climb, and it's all to do with safety. It's either too windy, it's either potential rain coming in, or excessive temperature over 36 degrees. As for the cultural aspect, Ananal asks you not to climb, but if you decide to, that's your choice, not theirs.
Just explain this choice thing. Why don't they just say, we're asking not to climb it, don't climb it?
Well... Yeah, no, I can't. I can't answer that one. It's there's too many different reasons there. That's not an easy question to give you a simple answer. It's too complicated. It's because of the history of the place, the way the management structure's been. We work with Ananal and Ananal work with us, so things have been allowed. Not necessarily liked, but allowed to keep things happening.
One of the things that makes just shutting the climb down completely a little bit complicated is that in the Ananal culture, people are required to take responsibility for their actions. The individual should know what's right and what's wrong. So gates with signs telling people what not to do is just not how they operate. This is Off Track on RN. I'm Mike Williams. And today we're standing at the base of Uluru, looking up at it, and we're asking the question, to climb or not to climb? Did you come wanting to climb?
Oh, we hadn't made up our minds. We're just going to get here and have a look. And
why hadn't you made up your minds yet?
Simply because we wanted to understand why people didn't want us to walk on it.
What are you thinking here? You've just got here. You're standing here. What's going through your head?
It's a steep walk for a start.
Okay, apart from the daunting walk.
I'd have a chat to my wife and just see whether we respect their beliefs.
What's your initial reaction?
Probably wouldn't do it.
That becomes a significant part of their experience, you know, that decision not to.
Oh, right, because they'll go back and they'll say, we went to Ayers Rock and we didn't climb because you're not meant to, yeah. And this is why.
Yeah.
Can I ask him a question? Yeah. Do you guys reckon you could get up there?
Yes.
You could. Do you want to go up there?
Yes.
Okay.
Have you read the sign, guys?
Have you read the sign, guys? Let's have a look.
Our traditional lore teaches us the proper way to believe, to behave. We ask you to respect our law by not climbing Uluru. What visitors call the climb is the traditional route taken by an
ancestral
Mala men upon their arrival at Uluru in the creation time. It has great spiritual
significance.
Significance.
Okay, so we just read the first couple of lines. What do you think now?
we won't be able to climb it because it's a really big sign for the Aboriginals and it's probably very special to them.
Do you still want to climb it though?
Yeah, because it's really big and cool.
Good exercise.
Yeah.
A good exercise.
I was always looking for a fossil in the coarse-grained Sydney sandstone, which, has very few fossils in it. Never found one.
Aren't we all looking for a fossil?
Marita Bradshaw is a senior geologist at Geoscience Australia.
The field work that you do, it's an excuse or a reason to be out in the bush for months on end sometimes.
She tells me Uluru is not a mountain. It's like the tip of a rock iceberg, so to speak.
Pretty much been sitting in the sun for 100 million years and slowly being weathered away and shaped. In many other places around the world, something wouldn't have been preserved that long because there would have been episodes of ice ages or earthquakes and mountain building events.
This sounds a bit funny, but the easiest way to understand how Ayers Rock was formed is to think of it as an upside down hole.
The initial deposition way back 570 million years ago, you had the mountain range pushed up from the southwest, and there probably was a big granite core in it or something, some source of the Arcos with all the feldspar in it. So, you start with a big pile of sediment with some special bits of rock within that sediment, the conglomerate at the Olgas, folded it, compressed it and made it particularly hard, and then the earth movements that made that mountain range, which shed that sediment, they continue and then push that sediment down into the earth. And really, Uluru is almost at the apex of a fold. And that might be one reason, as well as the sort of chemistry of the Arcos, that it particularly cemented, particularly hard, really welded together. And then eventually the top end of that fold emerges from the earth, and other softer rocks are over the top of it, and then they're eventually weathered away, and it's sort of the resistant core that's left behind.
That's a really nice symbolic metaphor that this is the thing that we're left with.
Yes, and, it's still there, and it's still beautiful.
I'm getting this image of the rock emerging out of the ground. You said that, but it wasn't quite exactly that. It was actually everything else around it going down. Is that right?
Well, it did get thrust up, but, these movements happen slowly, over tens of millions of years. It's not like something out of the cartoons. But
right. So when you say emerged up, you mean very, very slowly.
Slowly,
right,
yes.
Okay. It's only when the chain was put up that tourists really started climbing the rock anyway. It hasn't always been the thing to do there.
Is it a chain that helps people climb it? Why is that there?
That was there before this was a national park, and that was put in by a private entrepreneur at that period of time, thinking that putting that in will create safety for a lot more people to encourage them to go up without any consultation to the people that were responsible for this area in the first place. So it was done without consent, basically.
My nan and pop did it in the 70s. So I wanted to do it. I don't see any problem with it. I think as long as you're respectful when you do it, abide by basic rules, you don't take anything, you don't break anything. But I don't think it should be discouraged, encouraged. If you want to do it, you do it. It's everyone's. No one can claim it, just like we were wrong to claim it from them. They were wrong to claim it. You could say they're wrong from claiming it from us now. So I think if you want to climb, but I do understand the other point of view as far as too many people climbing it probably is not a good idea.
Knowing that it's significant to Indigenous communities doesn't bother you at all?
Look, it probably should, realistically. I suppose when you put it like that, I wouldn't like them burning down a church, I suppose.
Do you feel that you could have taken a bit more time to think about it beforehand?
Nah. No, I wanted to climb it. Yeah, no.
So
I've got to be honest. Yeah, it didn't matter what I read. I won't do it again, but now I've done it once. I do understand the damage in that, because no one wants to see it damaged. And you can see that footprint from the horizon,
With the white bit?
Yeah, we talked about it this morning.
It's a small, significant part of it, really, and it's going to get erosion anyway. With where the water goes, all the erosion.
Well, the problem
is
you bring busloads of people, but from other countries. Yeah. So maybe there's a thing there. Maybe you should stop by out of towners doing it. But maybe every Australian should be able to do it. But maybe half of China shouldn't be able to do it. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Okay. okay. All right.
I don't know what to say.
It's an idea. It's an idea.
Is that one way of sort of slowing the our damage down? I don't know.
It's one way, but then I don't know what to say.
I don't think that idea's that funny.
Why is it important for people not to climb the rock?
From my point of view, conservation is the biggest thing. It's not concluded in the sense of irreparable damage done in certain areas, but it's an area of extreme beauty, and it's a World Heritage area as well. Other World Heritage areas around the world, you're not allowed to even enter. So I think we're pretty lucky here that you can go up, you can touch it. But it's like when you go to anyone's country or anyone's potential home, you respect their laws for that place. So you go to your friend's place, you don't just barge in the house, you knock on the door first. So it's just out of respect more than anything.
To climb the rock, climbing it, how much damage is actually being done?
Well, not that much damage, I think, purely to the rock. But I guess people need to be aware of the cultural sensitivities, and there's plenty of other rocks and mountains to climb in Australia. There's no need to climb that particular one.
But just on a scientific level, with all the cultural significance aside, what sort of impact is being... Because you can see the line that, like, the white, there's a white line, and that's apparently the rubber of people's shoes. It's not sort of eroding it.
Yes, well, I guess, you know, anywhere where you walk, and especially in a fragile and sort of slow-changing environment, it's a desert, you know, that there's a mark left behind.
During the Mala walk, Tim did point out some of the environmental problems to do with climbing that you probably wouldn't think of.
If you think of the top of the rock as a water catchment area, well, anywhere in the world, you don't want to pollute or contaminate your water catchment area, because then that water's not sustainable for yourself. 340 metres to get up there, a bit higher than that. But up the top, there's no toilet facilities either. A lot of people go to sunrise in the morning, like this morning. Who had a cup of coffee when they were watching sunrise, or a cup of tea? After you see sunrise, you hop in your car and you roar around to this side of the rock and straight up onto the face. But then you get up the top and think, ooh, I've been caught out. Oh, it's just me. And duck off to the side. If it was only one person, wouldn't be too bad. But remember, we go up to 6 years with no rainfall at all. And that evaporation rate's 7 times greater. So anything that touches the surface that isn't water stays behind, but the water evaporates. Now you've got concentrated resources of contaminants. So if we take, say, one person out of every 10 over a 6-year period, then the rains come, there's a ton sitting up on the top of the rock that comes straight down into those water holes.
To me, it's like the spiritual heart of Australia, you know. I'm a migrant to this country, but I've learnt so much about what is truly Australia. We jokingly said it's the great Australian pilgrimage. It's the Hajj for Australians. You've got to come to the centre. It grounds you. It gives you a sense of perspective. We're all stuck away in our, you know, fast-paced, green little corners of Australia. We are people of the city, essentially. But I think you've got to get out to the arid interior of Australia.
Okay, we're standing at the base of the climb here. Are you going to climb it today?
No way.
No way?
Nah.
Why not?
Out of respect to the beliefs of the local Indigenous people. It's a massive enough experience and spectacle to come to Uluru. We've driven up from Melbourne. It's taken us a few days. And we've just almost circumnavigated the base walk. And we've stopped at every point of interest. The interpretation material here has been excellent. We've learnt so much. Contrary to, you know, the way that Central Australia is perceived as a desert, it's a place full of life. It gives us great inspiration. And why would you want to climb it? You know, what is this? Some sort of, you know, alpha male thing, got to climb the rock. You know? I don't doubt that it's a, you know, it'd be an enjoyable walk. But I can also just take time and see it from, you know, down here, which is, for me, a great experience sharing with the first Australians their homeland.
Do you think there's not enough information about why the rock is significant outside of Uluru?
I think these days ignorance is a choice. We're bombarded with great stuff on the ABC. You'd have to be living under the rock not to know, you know, what Australia's really about.
If you banned climbing, a group would stop going. But I think the core experience, it has been shifting over the years away from climbing it being the significant thing to other kinds of experience. A lot of tourists now own the sense that they haven't climbed it, and they, you know, that becomes a really sort of strong sense of moral superiority almost, you know, that I could have climbed it, but I chose not to because the advice from the people who know best.
They're empowered.
That's right. The tourist shops there, for example, sell T-shirts which say, "I climbed Uluru." They also sell T-shirts right next to them that say, "I didn't climb Uluru." You know, and it becomes, you know, and both, you know, become significant statements for the tourist.
On Off Track on RN, that brings us to the end of Inland Island. A few thank yous before I go. Thanks a lot to John Spence from ABC Archives, Peter Timmerman from the Sound and Reference Library, Lorena Allam, Kate Levy, Diane Dean, and the EP of the Science Unit, Lynn Malcolm. Sound production for today and the past 3 weeks has been provided by Phil McKellar. And this is my final week filling in for Joel Werner on the show. Thank you very much for your company over the past 6 weeks. I've loved every second of it. And thanks a lot to Joel for letting me keep his seat warm. I'm Mike Williams. I'll catch you soon.